A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations and institutions. Orchestras are just starting to kick off their new seasons, and many are increasingly offering programs designed to reach new audiences and even support their communities in new ways. The League of American Orchestras recently conducted a survey of its members to learn more about the range of these activities, and I'll speak with the League's president and CEO, Jesse Rosen, about some of these programs. We'll also hear about how the Las Vegas Philharmonic is helping its community recover from this week's tragedy. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Lincoln Center has scrapped its $500 million plan to redesign its David Geffen Hall. The Performing Arts Center and the New York Philharmonic jointly announced this week that they will forego the original proposal to renovate the Philharmonic's performance home and instead seek out a new master plan focusing on improving the audience and artist experiences. In the statement, the organizations said renovations would be done in phases, allowing the Philharmonic to avoid being displaced for a prolonged period of time. They also added that the work done so far on the earlier plan had revealed a number of complexities. According to the New York Times, some of the concerns over the project included the possibility that the Philharmonic might have to spend as much as 3 seasons in a temporary venue because of the work, and how much city funding would be made available for the project. The Philadelphia Orchestra announced that it will partner with several local organizations to raise funds supporting hurricane relief efforts in Puerto Rico. The orchestra said in a statement that it will collect donations during its upcoming concert performances of Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story running October 12th through 15th. Other partners in the effort include the Kimmel Center and the locally based cultural organization Taller Puertorriqueño. And in another example of healing, the Las Vegas Philharmonic has announced that it will pay tribute to the victims of this past week's tragic shooting and honor first responders at its October 14th concert to help heal the deep wounds being felt across the entire community. The Philharmonic will perform Beethoven's 5th Symphony instead of the original programmed Bruckner Symphony No. 1 and will begin the concert with Barber's Adagio for Strings. Some tickets are being given out for free to first responders in the city's police, fire, and EMS services, hospital workers, and anyone seeking, in the orchestra's words, the refuge and solace of music. Like many in the city, concertmaster Deanne Letourneau has a personal connection. She knows one of the women critically wounded, Rosemarie Melanson, through her daughter's dance team. I spoke with Letourneau about the concert plans and how this tragedy has reverberated through both the tight-knit local musical community and the community at large.
You know, the maestro kind of came to the forefront and discussed with the staff that it just seems that we need to offer some kind of solace through music, because that's what we do. We're musicians. This is our livelihood. It's really important for us to have music that's going to reflect what makes them feel better, what makes them feel to be able to meditate a little bit. So we've changed our program from the Bruckner First Symphony, which really wouldn't quite be as appropriate in this moment, to the Beethoven's 5th Symphony, which we felt really, really has such a huge impact. People love this symphony. People identify with the symphony, even people who are not regular symphonic attendees. I'm sure we're going to have speakers. I'm not sure. Nothing's been solidified there, at least that I'm aware. I'm sure Donato will say something. It's possible we could have some dignitaries that may say something to the community, and we'll open with the Barber Adagio and have that moment for the audience. And after that, then we will proceed into the program. You know, the Philharmonic is offering free tickets to anyone who feels that they need comfort. So the first responders, particularly the victims and the victims' families. We have lots of out-of-town families that are here because their family members are in the hospital and still fighting. And where else are they going to go in the city? So, you know, reaching out to some of those shelter areas to let people know about this who might not be locals, you know. But particularly, it's really for our community and letting people come and share moments through music.
As you mentioned, this is rippling through the entire community, and I'm sure there are ways in which orchestra members have been impacted. I understand you have a personal connection as well. What has the aftermath been like trying to deal with that?
Oh, You know, everywhere you go in Las Vegas, someone's been affected. You know, a friend of mine yesterday went into PetSmart and happened to be talking to the cashier, and the cashier broke down in tears, and he was there with his girlfriend, and he has a prosthetic leg, and he was trampled, and he can't get his prosthetic leg fixed. You know, and so we're trying to find out his name and see what we can do. There's so many of those stories, or the guilt. I have another friend who they were supposed to be there. They gave the ticket to someone else. Thank goodness the other person came late and was also in the back. And so wasn't in that, I'm going to call it the first wave of war zone there. So, but there's a lot of survivor guilt. People are just, they're in shock. They're kind of walking around, just kind of quiet. However, what I have noticed is there's a lot less, I don't want to say road rage, but you know, people in a rush getting somewhere, honking horns, or there's a lot less of that, which is great. I see people helping older people to their cars more, like with groceries or things. You know, it's just little things that I'm noticing that, you know, those things happen a little bit, but I'm noticing a lot more. And I'm wondering if it's because I'm noticing that more or because the community is really kind of coming out a lot more. Kids are writing thank you notes and cards and letters to the first responders. I also am a violinist for Celine Dion, and we went back on stage on Tuesday. And that was extremely difficult to do, you know, for all of us on stage. And there in that orchestra are several locals. And it was so difficult to do that show. There are people that are from all around the world that play in her band, and they were on the strip that night and they weren't working. So they were walking around or going to restaurants and just visibly shaken. So the community rallying together has been more what it's like. And the orchestra members, we all very quickly kind of checked in with one another. And not only the Las Vegas Philharmonic, but this is a huge musical community of the Broadway shows and jazz lounges and all the lounge acts, all the Cirque du Soleil shows. We had rumors that night of there's shooters, there's bombs, and it was mass chaos, you know, the whole night. But I would say the biggest thing is the community really coming together. One of the most powerful things that I saw, it was on Monday morning, and we still had not located Miss Rosemary, and I kind of helped to organize a prayer group, you know, of all the dance families. And there were over 100 people. And as I was on my way, I saw all this traffic. People were walking around just in the middle of one of the busiest streets in Las Vegas. And I saw police cars. And I thought, oh, no, what's going on? Is someone, what's happening? Like, I'm immediately, there's another shooter. There's a bombing. There's a something's bad because this is way, what's going on? And I drove by and I see it's the blood bank. There were, I don't know how many people, the line went 3 blocks long, wrapped around. And what was causing the ruckus was food trucks had stopped in the driving lane, in the far right lane, to do free food for anyone standing in line, because they were standing in line for 5-6 hours to give blood. That was probably one of the most powerful sights I've seen.
You've hit on so many different points, and I had been going to ask about just the fact that this was a musical event, and I can imagine that's kind of made it hit home even more.
Everyone in life has events that happen, getting married, losing a loved one, having kids, happy moments, sad moments. The beauty of art in all forms, the dance, the arts, the music, you know, acting, is that it's the expression of those feelings. And really having something that we're playing it for, whenever I'm teaching, and whenever I'm even working with young kids, especially young kids, because they're just learning, they're learning their instrument, they're learning how to express themselves through this medium of an art form of music. And I always tell them, I said, you have to know why you're playing this piece, not just so I can win a competition or so I can play the right notes or so my teacher doesn't get mad at me. You know, it's what is the story behind it? And if there is no story behind it, because sometimes a Shostakovich has tons of stories behind what he wrote and very tumultuous, but sometimes it's just a personal story you have. If there's no story with a piece, what is your story? How you feel in that moment? And to have to go on stage and play these, you know, Beethoven, which is so healing and powerful, just the vibration of the music, I think alone is so powerful. It's so healing to hear a live symphonic orchestra playing that vibration level of sound with no amplification. If someone has never seen live music like that, this is an opportunity to come in and feel what that does to just your body, what that does from a healing point of view outside. It's not headphones in your head. It's not the amplification, which most of the time as musicians today, we play lots of shows and it's all microphones and amped and they tweak the volume this is all just people coming together to create music that was written hundreds of years ago that can still be just as healing today as it was then. That to me is what's so amazing. It's so amazing. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to play music for my personal community, for my friends and family and guests who are here in our house to be able to do something small that can help them heal. And I know from all of my colleagues in the Las Vegas Philharmonic, all of the staff at the Las Vegas Philharmonic and all of the volunteers that are at the Smith Center at Reynolds Hall, where we will be performing, all feel the same thing. It's like welcoming everyone into our home to help a huge mass healing in any way that we can. That's the ultimate gift that we musicians, that's the best we have to offer, I guess.
That was Deanne Letourneau, concertmaster with the Las Vegas Philharmonic. More information on the concert can be found at lvphil.org. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. As the new performance season begins for orchestras, their calendars are now likely to include a variety of events offstage and even off-site as they reach out to an increasingly broad array of audiences with educational and community engagement programs. Students might attend concerts either in the performance hall or at their school, or maybe receive instruction from an orchestra member. Hospitals and assisted living facilities may invite musicians in to perform or provide other forms of music therapy. Or perhaps the orchestra or smaller ensemble will offer a concert in a bar, church, or other venue, or even perform a pop-up concert in a public space like a mall or outdoor park. The League of American Orchestras recently surveyed its members to get a sense of the range of programs now being offered. In terms of education, among those responding, 79% work with schools, and more than half provide some instrumental instruction. Some orchestras run community orchestras or choirs for adults in their community, or invite amateurs to rehearse or even perform side by side with their own musicians. The survey also found that orchestras are increasingly working with community-based and social service organizations, including those working in the health and wellness field or tackling issues like poverty, homelessness, and senior services. I reached out to Jesse Rosen, the League's president and CEO, to discuss some of the findings and explore how these orchestras are becoming more deeply embedded in the fabric of their communities.
There were a number of things. One is the amount of diversity in the people and audiences being served through a lot of this work. And, you know, an orchestra's primary, you know, main subscription series activity, you don't see a lot of diversity. At least not with respect to race and ethnicity. And that was not the case in a lot of this education and community engagement work. In fact, I remember the numbers, but I think it's 38% of people served were people of color. So that's really a big, important finding for us. Also, the amount of professional development going on for musicians who were involved in either education or community engagement work. And, you know, that's a sign for us of the sophistication of the work. It means that orchestras are investing in the actual practices of teaching, of presenting music and performance in non-traditional settings and doing it in a way that is engaging in a high professional level. So that, too, was really a very important finding. And then another one was that, the large proportion of performances are taking place outside of the concert hall. Mm. And, that too is another one of these changes going on in the field of going to where people are And, you know, the concert hall is great for a lot of things, but not everything. And so being in other spaces allows the orchestra to reach different kinds of populations and also different kinds of musical presentation.
Well, that was, there's such a variety of programs that we've been seeing develop, and some come along the more what you might think of as more traditional in terms of reaching students through concerts and performances. But then there's a lot of new territory being being covered, working with the homeless, working with social issues. What are some of the more unique angles that you're seeing coming out of this, and particularly coming from the orchestras and their own communities?
Yeah. Well, the work in Seattle really is quite quite singular and really remarkable, where, you know, the mayor had declared a state of emergency in the city because the homelessness crisis had reached such proportions, and the symphony said, well, you know, we have something to offer, we can help. And I think they went straight to the mayor's office and said, you know, how can we help with this? And, you know, it's interesting because you can certainly see how, you know, if you go back in earlier times, some would say, well, why in the world would an orchestra do that? You know, yes, homelessness is a crisis, and that's why we have social service agencies. Why in the world would a symphony orchestra want to have anything to do with this? And, you know, I think what's going on is a variety of things. One is orchestras do, in fact, want to, they've adopted a notion of service, you know, of wanting to be helpful in their communities above and beyond just the orchestras. The audiences that they serve. And, you know, when I talk to musicians, and I talk to a lot of them often, and talk to them about their experience, what makes them feel good, what helps them grow and develop, I mean, every single one of them I encounter says, you know, when I'm in a setting where I'm close to an audience, where I'm, you know, being helpful in some way, that in fact is what gives them incredible stimulation, inspiration, and I've even heard musicians say it makes them play better. In fact, I heard a musician in the LA Philharmonic who runs something called the Skid Row Symphony, and he was saying how when he plays on Skid Row in Los Angeles, that it makes him a better player on stage in Disney Hall. And the reason he said that is because that when you are in that kind of a setting, you have to be so clear about your artistic intent, because if you're not, you're going to fail. You don't have like 100 other musicians there on stage. You don't have lights and an audience that knows what to do. So you have to like sell it. And to sell it, you have to know what you're about and what it means and how you're going to get it across to people. So he was saying when he goes and plays on stage in Disney Hall, he plays better because he's gone through that, you know, that process. I heard the same thing from, there are a group of musicians in Houston who are part of community-embedded musicians. So I had a meeting with three of them, and they said to me exactly the same thing, that when they're performing in the community, it makes them better musicians because of the challenge, really, of being in those settings where you have to be so confident about your artistic intent, which means, you know, you have to really, you know, prepare, think it through in a way that's a little different than when you're on stage with 100 other people. So I think, you know, we're seeing in musicians now both a desire to serve, but also an embrace of this idea that, you know, what creates quality and excellence is not limited to, you know, a great instrument, a great concert hall, tons and tons of practice and all that, but there's something about the connection with people and audience that also fuels their own growth as artists.
One category that we have seen, again, it has roots going back quite a ways in terms of programs, but the way it's developing has been very fascinating, and that's the health and wellness side. What role are we now seeing orchestras play, particularly when it comes to health and wellness that goes beyond, you know, a quartet coming playing for residents of an assisted living facility?
A lot of the traction for this started at the Pittsburgh Symphony with a violinist named Penny Brill. Penny was the first person I knew that really took this on. It was out of her own experience. And so she just grabbed hold of this thing, and she didn't want to just, you know, show up and play a little bit. I mean, she really saw this incredible opportunity to actually have, you know, contribute to improved health outcomes. And since she got started, I mean, there's been so much research about the role and value of music in a variety of, you know, healthcare settings. And I think, you know, again, it's just, it's another way that musicians can contribute and help. And I also think, I mean, Penny's probably a really good illustration because it's personal to her. And I think everybody, you know, whoever you are, everyone's encountered, you know, whether it's Alzheimer's or cancer or heart disease, you know, whatever it is, you know, all kinds of health issues. And it's not a big leap from there to, you know, wanting to apply your talents as a musician. And I think, you know, part of this too has to do with philanthropy. The philanthropic sector has become much more demanding in their expectations of the results of the investments that they make. So, you know, it used to be you get a grant to go and do something and everyone felt good about it because you're doing something that was good and that was great and end of story. And, you know, philanthropy has moved quite a lot over the years. Now they want to know, well, what's the result? And what are the outcomes? And what are you measuring? What are your indicators? And over what period of time? And all that kind of thing. So I think philanthropy has had a kind of a constructive role in this. And then, of course, like with anything, if you're going to do it, it's reasonable to ask, well, are we making any progress? You know, is anything happening, you know, besides the smiling faces? So there's been a lot more rigor in orchestra's work in these areas, and they're often partnered up with, you know, music therapists or other kinds of professionals so that they're, you know, so the work is really grounded in some, you know, professional knowledge about what's the right approach to what they're trying to do.
Well, funding is a huge issue, and certainly this development is coming shortly after probably one of the biggest financial wake-up calls that orchestras have had, at least in quite a while, in terms of realizing they need to base their finances on different models, different structures. To what extent do these programs potentially compete with some of the more traditional expenses? Flip side of that, to what extent are they opening up new funding and philanthropic sources of funding?
Really good questions. And in terms of competition for resource, I don't think that's really a factor. I think more likely the opposite is true. In other words, that more resource becomes available because orchestras are adding. This is additive work that takes them in a direction that they may not have been going in before. And so new sources of philanthropy become available to them. And I think in Baltimore, that's certainly been the case, where their ORCIDS, their El Sistema program, has been such an enormous success. And it has been a real attractor, a lot of philanthropy that is specifically because the symphony is doing that kind of work. And there's philanthropy that they get that's not dedicated to that program that they wouldn't get if they weren't doing that program. In other words, the demonstration that the orchestra is committing itself to serving a broader part of the community is an important attribute from in the standpoint of many, many institutional and probably individual philanthropists.
And there certainly are many ways as well in terms of involvement of the community. In terms of, you mentioned Baltimore, and what also jumps to mind is their the Academy, Baltimore Symphony Summer Academy, which is one perfect example of the programs that many orchestras have been doing to bring in amateurs or people from the community. How are you seeing some of these different programs create different dynamics between the orchestra and the communities around them?
Well, I'll give you one. I'll tell you a story that's kind of related to this. It goes back a little ways. I had a meeting with the orchestra committee of the Louisiana Philharmonic, and this was took place before a concert, and it was 2 weeks before they were to move back into their concert hall, which had been underwater because of Katrina. So for 4 years, the orchestra was playing in high school gyms, churches, and community centers and all that. So I said, well, you guys, you must be feeling terrific about going back to your new hall. And they said, well, you know, it's okay. I said, what do you mean, okay? Why aren't you more excited? And they said, well, we've actually really enjoyed doing what we've been doing. And I said, well, how could that be? You know, you're playing these places, you can't hear, you can't see, it's uncomfortable. And they said, well, you know, when we couldn't see, we listened harder. And when we couldn't hear, we watched each other more intently. And they said, so actually, we got better as an ensemble from playing in all these places. And then they said, but the real reason we got better was because we could see people's faces. And when we could see them react to us playing, it was so inspiring, we played better. And, you know, I mean, this is the description of the performing arts, right? I mean, something's going on between the performer and the audience, and we have this wonderful, you know, loop of energy. And I said, well, so you're now going to have to give all that up. And I said, no, we're going to keep playing in a lot of these venues. We're going to go back to the Mahalian Jackson Theater, but we're going to do fewer concerts there. We're going to do more in a lot of these sites. And, you know, so that was the first time I actually heard anyone say, you know, from a standpoint of artistic quality and excellence, that there was a relationship between being in the community, close and connected to your audience, and playing better. So, you know, on the artist side, I think there are, you know, enormous benefits. On the community side, you know, the woman who partnered with the Seattle Symphony, I realize I didn't really finish that, who heads up one of the larger of the, I don't know, it must be like 20 different agencies the symphony's partnering with, she says that music is absolutely an essential ingredient in their care. I mean, that's, you know, just amazing and has been for a long time. But having this, they've never had like people like from the Seattle Symphony, you know, people who make their living as professional classical musicians. And, you know, they just talk about how it really helps them achieve their goals. So, you know, I think having impact in, you know, hospital or, you know, homeless shelter or what have you, I think the work's getting to be of a quality that is really having genuine impact. And to the extent that that's happening, then I think the orchestras develop more stakeholders, more people care about them and care that they are well supported and can sustain themselves.
Well, that actually leads to what some might see as a huge question, and that's how do you measure the what you might call the return on investment? How should you measure it, and what are some early indications of the ways that orchestras are benefiting?
I think from a financial standpoint, I think it's the long game. In other words, I don't think there are, you know, near-term returns on this. You know, I think for the most part, when orchestras go down this path, they're opening up a new cost center, not a new income opportunity. What is an income opportunity? But they're lucky if their costs are covered, you know, let alone have a net positive result. So it really is the long game. And I think the strategy is really what I said earlier, which is that, you know, from a ROI standpoint, that in order for orchestras to continue to sustain and also grow their support, they've got to be involved in contributing to their communities in a wider array of activities. And so I think one of the reasons why orchestras are fine with the long game is I think they find it incredibly rewarding. I mean, it's just something that really, they get a lot out of it.
That was Jesse Rosen, President and CEO of the League of American Orchestras. More information can be found at americanorchestras.org. We'll hear more from Rosen and also from some of the orchestras directly about their education and community engagement programs in the coming months. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.